Welcome, everybody, to the Third and Gold podcast presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined, as always, by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together, we cover Notre Dame football, recruiting, and more for blueandgold.com on the On3 network. We are entering the final off weekend of the season for Notre Dame football. The Irish have a five-game slate of winnable games awaiting in November, and the college football playoff possibilities unfolding ahead of them. With the break in the schedule, we thought it would be a good time to look forward a little bit and discuss the NFL talent on Notre Dame's roster. So we reached out to Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic, for some insight. Dane, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. Just to get started, Dane, we've talked to you a number of times before. I'm curious, how do you take in a college football season? What is your process in terms of just watching everything and then sort of figuring out how you want to hone in on different draft prospects?
Well, so much of the work is done in the summer. That's where you create the database of, all right, this is who we need to watch for during the season. And that way you have expectations going into the year. Malachi Field should look like this. And with a better offensive situation, it should like this. And then the season happens, and that way you can kind of gauge, okay, what is he living up to, what we thought, the talent, the traits, all those things. And obviously there's new players that pop up. Maybe players play better, others not as much. You know, for me, yeah, Saturday I spend all day watching college football and I take a lot of notes. And then Sunday morning when the tape is up, that's when I go back to my notes and, okay, first quarter, second drive, and make sure I watch it through the lens of the end zone copy and all 22 and get a better sense for what these guys are doing, their traits, what their strengths are, their weaknesses. And so, we're close to the end of October now, which is crazy. And so we only have really another month of real tape on most of these guys. Now, some obviously we'll be talking about into the playoffs in December and January, but for a lot of these prospects, we have a month left. And so it's, want to see these guys finish strong. And that way, because for the most part, while the pre-draft process matters, the all-star games, the combine, all the workouts, that matters. But most of the hay is in the barn. 80% of the evaluation, at least, should be done by January 1, where you have a good idea of who these players are, what their projection looks like at the next level, how they should translate. And so we're really kind of going into that fourth quarter of the regular season about what these guys, what they are as prospects.
So, Dane, when you're looking at the film and you see somebody like Leonard Moore, Kingston Viliamu-Asa, who are not draft eligible, do you just close your eyes or do you say, I'm going to make a note of this for the future?
I try. I mean, I make a conscious effort to not pay attention to anybody that's not draft eligible, but there are certain guys that make it hard. Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State's one of those guys. This year, for Notre Dame, CJ Carr's been one of those guys where, not draft eligible, but especially quarterbacks, because quarterbacks, each year guys change, develop, get better. But two guys, two sophomores, Julian Sayin and CJ Carr, I can't help but, focus on what they're doing and taking notes on these guys. But there's only so much brain space up here. And so I try to focus on only the guys that are draft eligible, that we're thinking are going to declare for the draft if they're underclassmen, and then, of course, the seniors. Sometimes it is hard, especially with the Leonard Moore, man. He is so talented, and I was really curious how they were going to use him against USC and that firepower and Mekhi Lemon, and seeing him move inside when he's really an outside corner and seeing him take snaps in the slot, and he is as impressive as a corner as there is in the country. And if you were in this draft class, you could go ahead and pencil him in as corner one. But he's not going to be in this draft class. And so, that's a good thing for Irish fans to get one more year of him.
Dane, since you mentioned CJ Carr, what has stood out to you about him, even though you're not zeroing in on him in the same way you're doing other quarterback prospects across the country?
Just the composure. Sometimes, he will live dangerously at times, but I think that, the toughest part of playing quarterback, I think, is bouncing back from mistakes and having that mental toughness. And this guy's got that. His just competitive juices that he plays with, It's something that either, you know, some guys will develop it better over time, but I think that the best ones are either you have it or you don't. And he seems to have it. And when you have those, that mental toughness, the mistakes don't bother you where they're going to linger from play to play. Okay. You make the mistake and you get better because of it. And I think we've seen that from, you know, the Miami game all the way, you know, now almost 2 months into the season, he has gotten better and better and better. And that's something that I think, you know, Notre Dame fans can be really excited about because of the way the offense, you know, last year, what it looked like with Riley Leonard, this year, how many more different ways that Notre Dame offense can score points and convert first, third downs and move the sticks and all these things. It, all these different more options that the quarterback gives you, it makes it a lot, you know, the odds of you winning games are going to go up when you have a quarterback like CJ Carr. And so I'm really excited for the summer when I can really dive into him. But just from a 30,000 foot view, you know, he's a guy that you definitely take note of.
So we'll circle back to Jeremiah, I'm sure, but there's Jeremiah Love, and then who would be the next best? Who would be, if you were picking, who would you be most interested in from the rest of the roster?
You know, that's interesting. See, coming into the year, I thought it would be Jaden Greathouse. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, what's going on with Jaden Greathouse? Because I really, the way he played in the playoffs last year, I thought, you know, this is a wide receiver class that's really wide open. I thought he could really make a move, and we just haven't seen that this year. Like, can you guys, you know, help me? What is going on with that situation?
I talked to somebody this week about it and kind of on the inside, and he's missed the last couple games or so with a thigh injury. I think it's a hammy, but even before he missed the games, he wasn't himself physically, and he's just getting back to that. So they expect over this November stretch, we're going to start to see the Jaden Greathouse that we saw, you know, with that run late last year.
Hopefully. That'd be awesome if we do. Cause yeah, he's a good player. And you know, bringing Malachi Fields into the mix definitely helped. I don't think Fields has necessarily, at least production wise, hasn't been, you know, played up to the level that maybe we thought he could. I don't think it's any fault of his. I think he's been especially good, moving the chains, scoring touchdowns. I think it's like 80% of his catches are touchdowns or first downs. But if we're not talking Jeremiah Love, I still think we got to stay at the running back position and talk Jadarian Price. I think, I mean, he is, obviously we know if he was starting at almost any other program, or, you know, at least 90-95% of other programs, he's your feature back. He's going to be a guy that maybe he's in the Heisman conversation somewhere else. But you know, playing behind Jeremiah Love, he doesn't get, you know, the production is not going to be on that type of level, but he's still playing at a high enough level that scouts are taking notice. And I think fans really appreciate what he does. Especially, you know, in some of these zone runs where he's able to anticipate, put his foot in the ground, get north, south. He's a guy that makes it a chore on defenders to get him on the ground. I would like to see them use him a little bit more in the passing game. You know, he's not a guy that's heavily targeted when, you know, on third downs and even on screens, but it's something where when he has been targeted, at least I think he has one catch, was it against Arkansas? He had the touchdown catch. So, I mean, he has done it. Just want to see it a little bit more, but this is a wide open running back class. And, you know, we'll see if he declares or not. He's a fourth year guy. So, you know, it's running backs only have so many hits in them. And so if he decided to go, I don't think it'd be a huge surprise. You know, I think if he went back and he's the unquestioned starter with Jeremiah Love, presumably moving on, I don't know that's necessarily going to bump him up in terms of draft stock all that much, but in the world of NIL, you know, things are a little bit different. He can go back to school, get paid handsomely. And, you know, so everything's on the table for him. But if he does go, this is kind of the year to do it because this running back class is wide open after Love. You know, there's a running back one and then a pretty big gap. And then it's, okay, is it Haynes at Michigan? Is it, you know, Coleman at Washington? But, you know, these guys are third rounders, fourth rounders. if Price were to dip his toe in the water, you know, he's at least going to be mentioned in that running back two conversation. And we've never seen two running backs from the same class or from the same school get drafted one and two in the same class. We've seen two of the top three. You know, the Arkansas was like that with Darren McFadden, Felix Jones, 20 years ago. You know, going back to Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams, where they were both top five picks. So we've seen two of the top three running backs drafted being from the same school, never the top two. And so if Price does declare, he'll at least be in that conversation.
Dane, what is it about Jeremiah Love that makes him the clear running back one? And how does he maybe compare to RB1s in previous draft classes?
NFL teams want to get more explosive. They want guys that are going to be on the field that affect the scoreboard. Jeremiah Love does that, and he does it in so many different ways. Yeah, he is a – he reminds me of, you know, James Cook, but except with the lead foot, where the accelerator – I mean, he can smash that thing and go, and he has the unique ability to stay afloat where the run balance – even though he's not the biggest guy, I don't think he has a traditional running back build – he is able to bounce off contact, spin off contact, catch his balance in a very unique way that I think really separates him. It makes him special. But then just the way that he can accelerate, the explosiveness, it makes him a threat every time he touches the ball. And that is something defenses have to account for. So you factor in what he can do in the passing game, whether it's out of the backfield or line him up in the slot. I mean, he can run routes down the field. He is not just a dump off target, check down guy. So all the different ways that he can beat you, that is tailor-made for today's NFL. And so I don't quite put him on the Bijan Robinson level. I mean, Bijan was a true top five, top 10 guy, and it quickly became a top three running back in the NFL. Jeremiah Love isn't quite there, but he's kind of right behind him. And so especially in this draft class where the top 10 talent is it's very unsettled, but that's the most polite way I can put it. It's a very unsettled top 10 this year where, you know, I really like Reuben Bain at Miami. You know, Arvell Reese at Ohio State, maybe Caleb Downs. We'll see. NFL teams don't really like drafting safeties in the top 10, but it's a top 10 that's really unsettled in terms of top tier blue chip talent. Jeremiah Love has a good chance to go in the top 10 just because of his talent and, you know, the lack of true top 10 guys this year. But as we know, it just takes an NFL team in a certain place roster wise where they feel like, all right, we just need to drop the running back onto our team. And that's going to be like, okay, that's going to put us over the top, or that's going to take us to the next level. You know, we're seeing the Raiders right now. They drafted Ashton Jeanty top five. That was not a roster that was ready necessarily for that, where you just drop in the running back and, oh, that's going to catapult us. Maybe a team feels differently with Jeremiah Love. You know, we'll have to see when we get the final draft order. That'll help us figure out where he's going to be drafted. But yeah, he's the only running back that I feel comfortable saying, all right, this is a first round pick pretty easily.
Dane, you mentioned that once the summer's over and you get into the season, there are people that surprise and people that fade. Who on Notre Dame's roster would have pleasantly surprised you and people that are evaluating their draft guys?
Well, you know, I think that the season has its own ups and downs, right? And we see that from guys, you know, Wagner at right tackle. You know, he's a guy that was highly recruited and okay, he was going to step in and, you know, kind of take that next step this year. And it was rough in that first game against Miami. And then I think each game he's gotten better and better. So that's been good to see. You know, in the secondary, Christian Gray has had his ups and downs. It's kind of like a roller coaster. It's very volatile, but coming into the year, very high on him because of the talent that he has. Just it's been a little more volatile than you want to see. And so, you know, corner is a tough position to play. Very, very tough. And so I want to see a little more consistency out of him because he has the talent to be a top 60 pick. You know, he could be a second round pick because of the talent. But he just needs to be more consistent on the field, down in, down out. And if he finishes strong here, that's something that could help him come draft time. Because NFL teams, they're going to draft traits first and foremost. And so if you are a certain level of athlete and you have a certain size and measurements, they're going to bet on that, especially at corner, which is a stopwatch position. And so I think Christian Gray, maybe not quite playing up to the level we had hoped, but the talent is still there, and it shows, you know, showed against USC. And so can he be a little more consistent down the stretch? I think that'll certainly help him kind of if he does go pro, because I think he's still a junior. So if he does go pro after this year, you know, help him come draft time. You know, the pass rush has been, some of those guys have been, you know, pleasant surprises. You know, on the offensive line, I mentioned Wagner, the left guard's awesome. So yeah, I think this is a Notre Dame team that is, you know, you clearly see the talent. Like, we knew that going in. You know, this is a playoff team last year, went to the national title game, even with some of the losses that they had, especially on defense, we knew they were bringing a lot of talent back. Who was going to be the next guy to step up? And I think we've seen a lot of guys do that.
Just a quick follow-up. What do you make of Eli Raerdon at tight end?
Yeah, I think he's been a nice... Because he didn't come into the year as a... This is clearly a draftable guy. Like, that right. wasn't... Like, coming into the year, the seniors that were considered... or the seniors that had draftable grades from scouts, Malachi Fields, Jalen Stroman... And that was probably it. Those are probably the two seniors that scouts were looking at Notre Dame and saying, these guys have draftable grades. And Raerdon wasn't in that mix, but he, when you look at some of the talent, you know, okay, you see a guy that has size, he's 6'6", 250 pounds, tall, well-built frame. And then, you know, like just looking at my notes, it was, all right, we wanted to see more. We were hoping for more from him last year on the 2024 tape. This year, looks a little more fluid as a route runner. Last year is really upright, mechanical. He looks a little bit more controlled in and out of his movements. And so that's helping him just create a little bit more windows for the quarterback. As a blocker, I think you're seeing that too, where he's more controlled at the point of attack. So I think in downfield is where you really see it as well. He can line up in line, but I think he's even better downfield where, you know, he could lock on the guys, drive them out of the play. So as a blocker coming into the year, he was just kind of adequate. I think he's gotten better. Same thing as a route runner, as a receiver. He was just kind of adequate, and there's nothing that really separated him. But he's playing better this year at the catch point and then just creating those windows for CJ Carr. So Raerdon has gone from a guy that was considered a PFA coming into the year. Now, all of a sudden, hey, he's got a chance to work his way into that draftable discussion because of the season and the way it's gone.
Dane, tight ends at Notre Dame have traditionally been drafted. Do you think that matters in a case like Eli, who hasn't maybe been tight end one much of his career, but at Notre Dame? Right. But now, as a start with maybe just 1 year as a starting tight end, does he get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt because of the tight end talent that comes out of Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean, I always say you can't scout the helmet, you know, right? The right. decal has nothing to do with how good of a pro you're going to be, but consciously or subconsciously, you know, like that's something Ohio State receivers and, you know, LSU yeah. DBs and, you know, go ahead and name whatever, but Notre Dame tight ends is certainly something that you're going to point to. And, you know, the fact that he is really just a 1 year starter, you know, that speaks to more of the talent that was there when he got there compared to him not being good enough. And he's still young. I mean, he's still 21 years old right now. And so he is a young player who you figure there's upside there. You know, he has not played his best football yet. And so we saw it against, what was it, Texas A&M game? You know, the way he played in that game. You know, we've seen flashes this year where he's someone that can help you move the sticks, and there's more talent there than maybe meets the eye. So yeah, I'm excited to see him over the second half of this year to see if he continues stacking good tapes and getting better. And then hopefully he gets an invite to an all-star game. That'll be a big part of it too. This is it's a decent tight end class this year. I don't think there's any, like among the seniors, there's no true top 50 pick, but then there's a lot of really talented guys, third round, fourth round, fifth round. And we'll see if Raerdon can do enough to maybe put his name in that mix.
I don't know if you've even evaluated him, but I'm curious. So I'm going to ask you about him. He's played in 3 games in 2.5 seasons since he's been at Notre Dame. And that's Charles Jagaza. He played in the Sun Bowl as a freshman, as a true sophomore. He played in the Penn State game at right guard and then played left tackle against Ohio State in the national championship game, then gets hurt this summer. Obviously, he's not going to be in this draft class, but in just those little windows, have you seen enough of him to have an impression?
Personally, I have not watched him, but okay. His name has come up. You know, like when you talk to scouts and like especially over the summer when I'll talk to a Midwest scout and we'll kind of go through Notre Dame's roster and like that's a name that comes up. So he is definitely on the radar. It's like, is he, because technically he's what, a
he's a redshirt third year sophomore.
Yeah, right. So I think that obviously he'll be back next year and hopefully he stays healthy, because he's a name that has popped up more than a few times as like, okay, this is a guy to watch. So, but I have not personally watched him yet, but safe to say he's on the radar for sure.
Dane, Boubacar Traore at defensive end for Notre Dame. This is his first year being fully healthy as a starter. He got hurt last year in a rotational spot, leads the team in sacks. He seems to us to be a guy that has NFL potential. What have you seen from him this season?
Yeah, and I wish we had verified measurables on him. I'm eager to see just how long he is, how big he is. Like pitchers in baseball, you know, like pass rushers, you need to have a lot of different ways to attack the hitters. You know, you have a lot of different ways to attack blockers. And so it's not just about your fastball. It's about pacing the way you come off the ball, setting up your moves, showing the blocker different things. So they're looking for one thing and then showing them something else. I think that's where we've seen Boubacar kind of grow the most, where it's not just, you know, hit the gas and try to win with speed. And it's, you're seeing pacing with how he's rushing the quarterback. And so that little bit of hesitation, little bit of, you know, using your hands in different ways, that throws blockers off, because they're always guessing. And so I think that's where you've seen the biggest development from him, is just he's growing as a pass rusher, understanding the best ways to beat blockers, whether it's trying to work his outside shoulder, trying to set up an inside move. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, watching him against USC, I think, you know, there was over a handful of times where he was affecting the quarterback, even if he didn't always get the sack. Mm-hmm. I know he leads the team in sacks and sack numbers are great, but the number of times he's affecting the quarterback, that is something that to me has been even more impressive than sack numbers.
Dane, the linebacker group, they play a 5-man rotation. They did that last year with Kaiser and it didn't seem to adversely affect him as far as draft status. But I'm wondering, as far as Bowen or somebody like Snead, are those guys even on the radar yet? Everybody in their linebacker corps still has college eligibility, but I was curious about those two in particular.
I looked a little bit at Bowen, who I like as a downhill guy. I worry about him a little bit in coverage, if he can drop in space, and someone that you can trust doing that. I don't think he's quite there yet. But yeah, I think all these linebackers, I just kind of assume they're going back, right? I don't see any of them as, you know, someone that is really considering going to the NFL. Maybe I'm wrong. And if that's the case, then I'll have to play catch up. But I haven't done a ton of work on those guys just because I kind of assume they're headed back to South Bend.
Dane, you mentioned Jalen Stroman as a draft eligible senior earlier, as someone that was on your radar going into the season, that hasn't really played out this season so far, where he lost his starting role. I'm curious, did you have any impressions of why that occurred?
Yeah, I mean, he was a good player at Virginia Tech, and then, you know, the injury issues is what, collarbone, shoulder, and yeah, this year at Notre Dame, it's been I think you can see the rust and trying to knock that rust off, and I think he's gotten better. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he lost his starting spot, right?
Yeah. Dave Johnson has replaced him, who was a redshirt freshman. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's, but obviously they still need, this is still a player you want impacting the game. You want him on the field in certain situations. And I think that we're seeing him knock off some of that rust. But you know, he's third year, I think, as you know, he started 2 years at Virginia Tech. And so he has experience and he's a good overall athlete. He has good range. You know, he has the athleticism where he can work down, but also work back. And I think that because of those athletic tools, he is someone that will still get looks at the next level, even though this year hasn't gone as planned. But I think it's just a lot of rust as coming back from the injury. And you know, you're in a new system, you're working with new coaches, like it's just a lot of new stuff. And so I'm not totally surprised it was a little rough to start the year, but you know, I think how he performs now the second half of the year will give scouts a better idea of, okay, how real is he as a prospect? He came into the year as kind of a mid-round guy, maybe early day three type of prospect. That's how scouts viewed him. Now he's kind of hanging on as maybe a late rounder, but I think he has work to do over the second half of the year. Whether he works his way back into the starting rotation or not, he'll still get on the field for Notre Dame. And so special teams, defense, still making an impact, even though the first half of the year maybe didn't go as planned. That'll be key for him to still be a part of this this draft class and maybe get drafted late.
Yeah, I would imagine, especially as a run defender against Navy, he may be especially helpful. How often do you see guys like that now with the transfer portal, where maybe they're have draft eligible status, if presuming a good season happens, and then they step into a situation that maybe it doesn't go the way they want? Do you see that more and more frequently?
Oh, no doubt, and it's really jarring too when you hear some of the numbers that these guys are getting paid. You know, they're, cause you go by that and you're like, oh, they're paying this guy that much. Okay. Well, I need to make sure and watch him. And then, yeah, sometimes it just doesn't work out and it's crazy. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys, it's trying to keep track of it all. I don't want to paint like a broad brush, like it's all negative. Cause there've been a lot of times where it's worked out great for a player where maybe he wasn't getting the coaching or development he needed at one spot, goes to and I think it all comes from the guidance that they're getting. Not all guys are getting the best advice, but some guys are getting, you know, they're looking at their options. It's maybe not the highest dollar figure. It's okay, where are the coaches that develop this position, or where's the spot where I'm going to have a clear path to play and have a chance to really fulfill my potential? And so, yeah, we see it. There's plenty of examples of guys that have, you know, been prospects over the summer and then at their new home just haven't put it together. And, you know, they were highly recruited by different programs. One school wins and they get them. And by, you know, October, they're not even starting. And so it's more common than you would like to see. And I'm not sure there's one, you know, main culprit for that. You know, with Stroman, like I said, I think it's just, it's rust from the injury and then just a new system. And it's taking him time to get adjusted. And I don't think that's uncommon. And it's especially tough when you have that 1 year left of eligibility where it's like, okay, this is my final go around. This is my chance to show scouts what I've got. And it's for some guys, it just takes longer than others to really settle in and be comfortable in that system.
Well, all right, Dane, that's all we have for you. We really appreciate you taking time to talk to us and enjoy the rest of the season and good luck on the beast.
All right, you too. Thanks, guys.
Before we get back to the podcast, I wanted to share a word from our friends at Academy Sports and Outdoors. At Academy Sports and Outdoors, we proudly honor our brave military and first responders for everything you do to protect our nation and serve our local communities. We appreciate your unmatched dedication and countless sacrifices. And from October 19th through November 11th, we're giving you our salute with 10% off your sports and outdoors purchases at your local Academy store and online at academy.com/discount. Exclusions apply. All right, now it's time for questions. You can submit questions to us on Twitter or the Loose Emoji Board before every podcast. I'm at TJamesND and Eric's at EHansonND. First one we have, Eric, is from NDBSC on the Loose Emoji Board. Can you make me feel good about our kicking game in the games to come? Two kickoffs out of bounds, a missed field goal, and a missed extra point versus USC. Try hard.
Well, the punter is punting very well. James Rendell is among the leaders in net punting in the country. When we're talking about place kicking and kickoffs, I think it's going to be hard for me to talk you off the ledge on that. We had a chance to talk to Marty Biaggi, the special teams coordinator, the Tuesday before the USC game. And his assessment at that time was if they could get Noah Burnett through USC and through the bye week, they felt pretty good about him being out of the woods with the hip injury. And there isn't confirmation at this point that that's what caused the place kicks to go awry, but I think we can probably assume that there was some of that in there. Eric Schmidt has been money other than those two out-of-bound kicks against USC. He kicked his first one against Purdue out of bounds, and then everyone after that had been a touchback. So I think he's going to find his rhythm. The question at this point is, can he handle both? Can he handle being the kickoff guy and being the field goal kicker? He definitely has the distance. He has not had the consistency in practice, but he's a guy that can that they can feel good about marching out there between 50 and 55 yards. And so they're going to find out, you know, in the next couple weeks in practice. I almost think they have to make him the number one kicker, or at least have a game where he is, get him used to that kind of pressure and that kind of volume, especially with how many extra points and kickoffs he has to do, because I just don't think you can count on Noah Burnett being there. You can hope, but you know, he hasn't shown that he's been able to stay consistently healthy.
Yeah, and I think you need Noah Burnett because he's your best kicker. So I think it's hard. I think the bright side of that is, like, that was a bad game for Noah Burnett, but that was still the first field goal he missed. That was the first time he missed a PAT. His availability has been the bigger issue with him than in terms of his accuracy. In terms of being an optimist and needing optimism, you hope that the bye week is the time that Noah Burnett needs to get off, and he's fully healthy moving forward, and you can fix things. You could say, well, maybe the weather impacted those kicks against USC, and for either guys, frankly. But going into November, you're probably going to have some bad weather at times too when you're a kicker at Notre Dame. So I think I'm not a miracle worker or a therapist, so I can't make you feel too good about this. But to me, Noah Burnett needs to be the answer. But he can't be the answer if he's not healthy.
Yeah, I think the thing about it is you are at a point in your schedule where you can let him get healthy. I think going against BC and Navy,
right.
I think you'd want him for Pittsburgh, especially. That's a really tricky place to kick. It's one of the hardest stadiums I've heard for kickers because of the way the winds come in in that stadium. It's very, very difficult. So I would want him for the Pittsburgh game.
All right. At Mike DeVoy 1 says, bye weeks are so much more enjoyable after a big rivalry win. Any updates on Billy Shrouse's knee? Hopefully he's fine. He was a beast against USC. And also, I was surprised that CJ Carr didn't throw more to Malachi Fields and Eli Raridan. Did USC cover them well, or was CJ not locating them?
Let's do Shrouth first, and then we'll unpack the other thing. Shrouth, he's so tough. He's going to want to be back this week, and that's not going to be possible. Could they have him before the regular season? Probably. These timelines aren't as fixed as I think sometimes if somebody says 3 to 4 weeks, they're not as fixed as fans would love them to be, because there's just things that happen with the body and you don't always know how it's going to heal. I would say realistically, he's going to be back for the playoff. If they get him before that, I think that's icing on the cake. But I think a realistic more realistic timeline would be playoff. And then if he comes back by Pittsburgh, you can jump up and down and celebrate.
Yeah, I think Mike probably asked this before reports came out about what we've learned about Shrouth. Notre Dame has officially ruled him out for Boston College and nothing beyond that. And sprained MCL is what he's dealing with in terms of a knee, reportedly. I know Mike Singer did some work on trying to confirm what was going on there with Shrouth's knee. So it doesn't seem like it's a surgical situation, which would be why he could return later this season. Sprained MCL was what Jeremiah Love dealt with last year. And obviously Love wasn't necessarily the same version of himself down the stretch, but he was able to get back out on the field. We'll see how that works out for Billy Stroud. And not every sprained MCL is the same. I'm just giving some context in terms of what a sprained MCL is. And then what do you think about the Fields and Raritan aspect of whether or not TJ Carr was missing them?
I'm going to let you take the lead with that since you do the film reviews. I wasn't really monitoring that. I mean, CJ Carr is coached to find mismatches and holes in the defense. So if they don't get their opportunities, it's not like, you know, when you're on a T-ball team, everybody gets an at-bat and a snack. So there are going to be games like that. But Tyler, you go over the film, so you probably have a way more deep analysis than the T-ball analogy.
Yeah, both of them were targeted three times. Each caught one pass. Raritan was targeted on the first offensive play, and it wasn't graded as a drop by PFF, but I thought it was a drop. It was a pass he should have caught. Carr had a bad throw to Raritan later in the first quarter. Fields almost made a great catch on the sideline. I thought Carr missed him with an off-target throw on another one. But beyond that, beyond the targets that they received, I didn't see lots of examples of them being obviously open. So I don't know if that was because of the individual players covering them were doing a good job, or the coverages in general were geared to maybe not allow them, or maybe they were Notre Dame's scheme was more geared to finding other guys as first reads. But they weren't big parts of what Notre Dame was doing. And Notre Dame wasn't throwing the ball like crazy either. What CJ Carr had, I think, 26 pass attempts, which isn't nothing, but it's not a huge amount either. So for each of those guys to get three targets, that's a decent chunk of what Notre Dame did offensively. All right, next question is from Jack Quinn at JQ6008. Has anyone asked Marcus Freeman why, given their short yardage struggles, although it was better against USC, they don't have a package with Kenny Minchie, a la 2021 when they had Jack Cohn with the Tyler Buchner package? I'm not wild about exposing CJ Carr to these running situations.
They may have a Kenny Minchie package that they've never used. So, but let's plug that into your question. Why wouldn't they use it if they had it? Marcus has been asked about it. I asked him about it. When we were talking about the Wildcat, I said, would this be more effective, perhaps having somebody run it who also is a passing threat? Because Darren McFadden, who's probably the most famous Wildcat running back, threw touchdown passes. He was a high school quarterback, and he had a really incredible percentage throwing the ball and a touchdown percentage throwing the ball. So, yes, he has been asked. I think they have some other things in mind in terms of improving short yardage in November, and I think a big part of that's going to involve the two Flanagans. Cooper Flanagan, who just came back from January Achilles injury. His first game of this season was on Saturday against USC. And then James Flanagan, who I wrote about all the offensive players that are freshmen in an Intel piece that I think you'll want to check out, why they have used him more to this point and why they're going to use him a lot in November. So I think that'll be part of that. And then, you know, then I think CJ Carr probably will be a little bit more involved in that, but I don't think it's going to be Minchie unless, you know, this new plan doesn't work. But I think they feel pretty confident about what their short yardage is going to be in November.
Yeah, James Flanagan's played in just one game so far, so there's redshirt math to be involved there potentially,
right?
In terms of how Notre Dame,
well, it's a priority, yeah, for them
to use them. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that I have much to add because Eric has asked about the Minchie package. At Charles W. Wolf, I know we're about Team Glory, but do you think Mike Denbrock's play calling in Week 1 might cost Jeremiah Love a shot at the Heisman?
No, not at all. And I think what'll maybe make it harder for Jeremiah Love is the November schedule of Notre Dame. He's not going to be in a lot of marquee games before the vote is taken. And people are going to be paying more attention in November. They're going to be watching those big games. The other thing is it's really difficult to overcome the quarterbacks. You look at the Heisman polls, and I hate those, but you look at those, and it's generally top five are all quarterbacks. It's really hard for a running back. Now, Ashton Gentry did last year, but the guy carried the ball like 1,000 times. And so it's really difficult for somebody, especially that's sharing the ball, to get those kind of numbers. I mean, had Jadarian Price been abducted by aliens and Jeremiah Love had to play the whole USC game, he would have broken Julius Jones's record. And that would have been something that would have been, I still don't think it'll be enough. I don't even know if it's enough to get him to be a finalist. Jeremiah is a guy that you kind of have to see to appreciate him. If you just look at his raw numbers, you know, he didn't get first team midseason All-American on a lot of these teams. It was the kid from Missouri and Haynes from Michigan. So, but he definitely is the best back in the country. You just have to see him to appreciate him, and that's not going to be enough to win the Heisman.
Yeah, I mean, in this hypothetical, are we assuming that Notre Dame would have beat Miami if Jeremiah Love was more involved in the game? I'm still not sure that it would have been enough to win him the Heisman. I didn't love the game plan and said that back at the Miami game, but I think regardless of that, I think it's so hard for a running back to win the Heisman, as Eric mentioned, and especially one who shares carries. Like, he was never – regardless of what happened in the Miami game, it wasn't Notre Dame wouldn't have come out of it and be like, you know what, we're going to give Jeremiah 30 carries a game. Like, that wasn't going to be the case. And something like that would probably be what it would need to happen in order for him to win the Heisman. Unless, I guess the other way that could happen for a running back like him is, well, if Jeremiah Love was the guy returning these kicks for touchdowns like Jadarian Price is, then maybe there's more of those splash plays that get the attention of voters beyond just offense that would help him out. But I think in terms of talent, Jeremiah Love is a Heisman level player in terms of Heisman finalists being in that conversation. But in terms of the reality of the Heisman race, it was always going to be a long shot for Jeremiah Love to be a legitimate contender. All right, next question is from at @MikeDevoy1. What do coaches Ash and Washington need to focus on during the bye week to ramp up the pass rush?
I think, and I would include the whole defensive staff in that, because there's some blitz packages that would involve linebacker blitz packages that would involve safeties, maybe even a corner blitz. And I think you have to be really creative in disguising your coverage and so forth. But the one thing we've seen is their pass rush is getting better. I mean, they are getting sacks. They are getting pressures when they don't get sacks. So I think keep doing what they're doing. You know, they'll do the self-scouting things that help them get better. Again, Tyler rewatches all the games, so I'm sure you'll have some more technical things. But I've been impressed. I mean, they've gone from the very bottom of the FBS into the top fourth of the teams in terms of sacks per game. And that's a difficult climb when you start out with such a low number.
Yeah, that was my first thought too, that I think they've already ramped up the pass rush. That doesn't mean they can't do more, but there has been an increased performance with that. The Notre Dame's 33 ranked 33rd in team sacks with 2.43 per game. The team pass rush grade from Pro Football Focus ranks 25th in the country. I think Notre Dame just has to continue working with the defensive linemen to win one-on-one matchups, get your best pass rushers in those situations, and find the right blitz packages that work. I think as we've seen the season go on, Boubacar Traore is the obvious number one pass rush threat for Notre Dame. I would expect more teams to try to give him less opportunities to create pressures, but that should open up other opportunities for other guys. And so those other guys need to be ready to step up, find the right blitz packages that work, that maybe prevent people from double teaming Boubacar Traore or getting a second guy on him. So I think those would be some of the things that Notre Dame can continue to work on. All right, our next question is from Marie Biafore at Biafore underscore Marie. Since it's the bye week, great time for grades. Can you each grade each position group, including special teams this far in the season, as well as each coach, and can you each comment on the most important thing each position group needs to improve upon in order to make a run?
Okay, I guess the easiest way to do this is just each of us go through each position group and then reset and answer those same three questions for every one of them. It's again, Marie, you know me, I'm an easy grader, and it hurts my head to do it in the middle of the season. It's like voting for a team in an AP poll based on what the score was midway through the third quarter. I just see the game a different way. I see, okay, but this is what it's going to turn into. That's kind of how my mind works, but I'm going to try to do this as a freeze frame. I'm going to humor you because you are the best question asker in the history of question asking. So for quarterback, I will go with an A. I will give Gino Gaudioli an A, and I will say what we need to see the most out of that position in the November stretch and into the postseason is better decision-making by C.J. Carr. There are times where he just needs to take the sack instead of trying to make a miracle and then turning into a disaster. And so I think that's his biggest part of his growth.
Yeah, I don't have separate grades for players and coaches. Like, as a position group, I feel like you're
like, okay, they're good. But she wanted me to comment on them. No.
I know that's what she asked for, but at least from my perspective, like, I don't think you can separate the two. Like, you could say, like, if we want to have a conversation of how do we grade Mike Denbrock as a coordinator and Chris Ash as a coordinator, like, those can be different grades if we want to do that. But in terms of position groups, like, that's my perspective. And so I don't have separate grades for
the and the coordinator coaches. Affects the position coaches too.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think to get they're a unit in my mind. So maybe I'll
make a comment on the position coach. Instead of the grade,
Marie can blame me if we get bad marks for not having grades for both of them. For quarterback, I had an A-. I think it's right there. I think an A is certainly perfectly fine. I think maybe Carr not having some of his best games in some recent weeks probably put that minus on there. But I think you nailed it in terms of, like, what he needs to do to improve. Dane Brugler talked about earlier, like, CJ is impressive in terms of, like, playing through adversity and rebounding from mistakes. But I think there's in those moments of when things are maybe going awry, there's some things that CJ Carr can do better to improve upon what his output is. Next up, running backs. But what do you got for the running backs, Eric?
I have A+ for the running backs. What I will say about Jawan Sider is you can see in their play his approach to having them see the game through the quarterback's eyes, being able to recognize defenses more. And that, I think that's really helped Jeremiah Love in the passing game. And also, I think if Dylan McCullough were still coaching, we would have seen more Aeneas Williams and Nolan James in critical downs. I think, you know, Jawan really wants to have his two horses on the field when it really matters. And I think that's the big difference. What they can do to improve short yardage. That would be the improvement, short yardage efficiency.
Yeah, I gave them an A+. It's hard to ask for much more. The short yardage thing is something that they can help with. I think the offensive line has a lot to do with that as well. The other thing that I mentioned was protecting the football. There's been some fumbles that have not cost Notre Dame necessarily, but Jadarian Price has had a couple fumbles. Love lost one, but regained it himself. And so just making sure that they continue to protect the football would be something that they could improve upon. All right, wide receivers.
Wide receivers, I will go with an A-, and probably their grade is higher than maybe some people would think, but I think they've overachieved. I think they've been much better than I've thought they would, and that's with Jaden Greathouse not contributing a lot to them. Jordan Faison has been a revelation. I've been so impressed with him. Will Pauling has been probably better than I thought he would. And then Malachi Fields has been, as Dane Brugler pointed out, he's been really productive on touchdowns and first downs. And they're not as deep as they've been at some of these positions, but I think that's smart by Mike Brown, and maybe not forcing a six-man rotation, and maybe giving KK Smith his flowers, as Ty Horka likes to say, or Micah Gilbert when he's healthy. KK Smith didn't play in the game Saturday, did he, Tyler?
At least not on offense. I'm not sure if he played special teams anyway.
Yeah.
But he
did okay. Not. Yeah, that was kind of odd. But anyways, that's my A-minus explanation.
Yeah, I had a B+. I think just more depth and playmaking would be what I would like to see from Notre Dame's receiver position moving forward, like getting Jaden Greathouse back into the mix. And I just think there could be some more plays. Like, there's a lot of opportunities that Malachi Fields is given to make difficult catches. I think there needs to be some more, maybe easier catches for him and some of the other players in the receiver group. Jordan Faison has been great. He's probably surpassed my expectations, maybe more than anyone on the team this season. He's been absolutely the sort of the go-to receiver, even though they have Malachi Fields. Like, Jordan Faison is consistently open for Notre Dame, and CJ Carr takes advantage of that. All right, what about your tight end grade?
I gave the tight end group a B-, and it's not based on Eli Raerden. It's based on the whole group. I just don't think they've got a lot of mileage out of Ty Washington, really. Cooper Flanagan is just coming back. You've had 11 snaps from James Flanagan. I think that grade's going to go up in November as those two get more involved. Jack Larson hasn't been a factor. So B- for me. Tight ends coach, I think he's really good at what he does and with the offense. And I think, again, we will see the position coach version of Mike Denbrock probably more involved in November. We're going to see, I think, just another gear in the offense. Not that they're going to be tight end oriented, but just another gear and what they could do better, help in short yardage, both with the pass and the run. And again, I think we're going to see that with the Flanagans.
Yeah. I gave the tight ends a B, maybe didn't ding them as much for the guys below Eli Raerden, although that is certainly fair. I think,
well, thank you.
We'll see more than more, Flanagan involvement, better blocking would be a focus for me in terms of what they can improve upon. I think Eli Raerden has ups and downs. I think he blocked really well against USC. Ty Washington, I'm not sure that he's given Notre Dame as much as you would want to in the blocking category, especially given that's basically his role is to be a blocker. And I think there's a chance that Cooper Flanagan takes more and more of those opportunities away from Ty Washington down the stretch. All right, next up, offensive line.
Offensive line, I'm going to give them a B. They've had so many things involved in their grade, starting out very slow but improving. They get credit for that, having to deal with crisis with injuries. I think they've dealt with that really well. I feel very good about three out of the four true freshmen being probably ready to plug in if you really, really needed them. Matty Augustine and Will Black have both had dinged a little bit at different times during the season. But I think in November, if they were needed, and I think next year they're going to be really, really good. Cam Heron has been really impressive in practice from what I'm told. The only really kind of developmental guy in that group is Owen Strebig. So, what could they do better in the second half of the season or the stretch run here. You know, be healthy. Don't get any more injuries. We started to see a surge in being able to be really good run blockers. If they can consistently do that against every team on the rest of their schedule and still maintain what they've been doing in the past blocking, I'd say they're well on their way to a better grade.
Yeah, I have a B as well. I think they have to survive without Shrouth and Craig now. Joe Otting showed well so far in his replacement of Ashton Craig. Now I think he's got to continue to do that, right? It's not a one game season for him. Now the spotlight's on Sullivan Apsher to step up with Shrouth out. I think Shrouth is Notre Dame's best lineman this season by a pretty good margin. So that will be important for Notre Dame. That's going to be a challenge to replace him as long as he's out. So I guess I don't know if that counts as an improvement, but that's the challenge moving forward for Notre Dame is being able to replace him. All right, defensive ends.
Okay, I just did defensive line, so let me recalibrate in my mind. Defensive ends, I will give them a B minus. I think Traore's been incredible. I think the defensive ends have been pretty good against the run. I'm sorry, I'm going to upgrade that to a B as I'm talking through it because they have been really good against the run. Where we haven't seen, you know, and I think Coach Washington has done a good job. I need to see more of is some pass rush ability from the Bryce Young, Jordan Botello side of things, Josh Burnham. But against the run, those guys have been really good.
Yeah, I gave the defensive ends a B. Traore is a big part of that. Like I consider it a B plus just because of how good he's been. But I think Notre Dame needs to have more help at that position beyond him, a better pass rush at the position beyond him. So those would be the things that I think Notre Dame can improve upon moving forward. What about defensive tackles?
Probably a B minus, although they have been improving. I was very impressed with Jason Anye in the USC game. I said, the guy that Marcus Freeman was talking about in August, that guy needs to show up in the USC game. And I think in the snaps he took, he did. It'd be great to get Gabe Rubio back. Elijah Hughes really lifts that grade up for me. I think on defense, he's probably been, not probably, he has been my biggest surprise, biggest pleasant surprise. Dawson has been playing really well lately. So I think they're trending upwards, but I still would not give them a real high grade just yet. And they need to keep coming. You got to get Rubio healthy. And if that's the version of Jason Anye you're getting, then that's great.
Right. Yeah. I think I gave him a B minus. I think the group as in general needs to create more penetration. I think Gabriel Rubio has been the clear standard at defensive tackle for Notre Dame. Someone like Donovan Heinisch has gotten a lot of credit from PFF for pressures, which I don't know that like when I think of the defensive tackles in the season they're having, that's not something that has stood out to me. So I'm curious to see if that can continue or if he has some say in the way that Notre Dame finishes the season. We've seen improved efforts from guys like Elijah Hughes. So I think the position is coming on, but it's probably the weakness of the defense right now, in my opinion. All right. How about linebackers?
I gave them a B. I thought I was surprised at how much I don't know if struggled is the right word, but just didn't look comfortable in the scheme early. They're comfortable now. Bowen is really rocketing up. And I agree with Dane Brugler's assessment of him as a pro prospect. But I do think in the last couple of games, he's really shown himself to be able to cover people. And I know that was a concern for a lot of the people on our message board. And rightly so earlier in the season. But he's done a really good job of that lately. They seem to have found a rhythm. I mean, I like I like when they can play the big look where they have the three linebackers on the field against certain teams. So I think they're trending upwards. I think Coach Bola's done a really good job with them. What more could you get out of them? Probably, again, just affecting the game with a pass rush, whether they're blitzing or whether you drop Snead or KVA down into the defensive line on in certain packages, just their pass rush ability.
Yeah, I have the linebackers at a B+. I think Bowen has come on and played better as the season has gone on. I think Notre Dame needs that to continue. And I think in terms of how the linebackers can continue to impact the pass rush is something that they can work on it and make Notre Dame's defense even more imposing. So those would be things that they can sharpen moving forward. Now, do you have defensive back separate or you want to do them together?
I did them separately.
Okay. How about corners?
Corners, I gave a B. It's hard to give them a lower grade collectively when Leonard Moore is one of them. And he's just incredible. And it doesn't always show up in his Pro Football Focus stuff. And it doesn't, although it does usually, but I didn't think it did in the USC game, and just how he lifts everybody else up around him. You know, Christian Gray's been up and down. I think the freshmen have played really well for how much has been asked of them, and that's Dallas Golden especially and Mark Zachary. So for me, it's a B. Mike Mickens, he doesn't need any advice from me. I think he's as good a position coach as there is in the country. Where they need to improve for me is consistency with Christian Gray, and then determining if they need to be a little bit more flexible like they were in the USC game. Do Leonard Moore and Christian Gray need to flip sides sometimes? Do you need to put Leonard Moore in the slot? But I think they're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I gave the group a B-, and that includes the nickelbacks. I know there's – I mean, some people feel differently about whether nickels or safeties or corners, but so I think that is the difference to me in terms of the B and the B-. And so much of that has to do with how the season began at the nickelback position. I think there has been improvement there throughout the year, but I wanted to include that in the grade. Christian Gray hasn't had a great season. That is a big area to improve, I think, moving forward, getting more consistency out of him. I mean, obviously, keeping more Leonard Moore healthy would be a good way to improve what they can do at the cornerback position moving forward. All right, what do you got at safety, Eric?
I have an A. I think Tay Johnson becoming a starter really upgraded that position, and I think they're just continuing to get better. Luke Talich is playing well. Jalen Stroman is going to kind of have to find his role here with all the other guys playing so well. Again, Mike Mickens deserves a lot of credit for how they're playing. What they need to do better, I'll have to think on that. I'm sure that there's improvement out there, but they are trending in the right direction. Don't listen to my advice. Don't screw that up because they're getting better every week.
I think they could make some more plays defensively from that safety position in terms of improvement moving forward. Luke Talich has been clutch in terms of like clinching games in the fourth quarter, but maybe having some of those moments earlier in the game from the safety position could be helpful. But they have had big moments. Schuler's there in terms of helping strip Mekhi Lemon on that fumble against USC. He had a forced fumble against Arkansas. So just some more playmaking. I gave the group an A-. I think they've done a pretty good job and significantly improved since that Miami game to start the season. All right, let's wrap it up with special teams.
I gave them a B. I think, you know, the Burnett situation is troubling, and yet they haven't missed a ton of field goals. They maybe haven't tried some that they would have otherwise.
Right.
But Eric Schmidt has been really good at kickoffs other than the two out of bounds against USC. He's been tremendous. I mean, teams can't return. James Rendell, Notre Dame was 11th in net punting, and they've come up a lot. If you take out, if the rule were different on the touchback that happened, his one touchback in his career so far, they would be third in the country, or second or third, and they would be very close to being number one in net punting. And you think about the kickoff. I mean, this is part of it. I mean, the kickoff return for touchdown from Jadarian Price, kickoff returns. Punt returning has been strong. Coverage has been pretty good. So you have to add that into the grade. Otherwise, you know, I think it's too skewed towards what's going on with the field goal kicker.
Yeah, I gave the group a B plus because, yes, the kicking has not been great. And that has influenced the way Marcus Freeman has made decisions in terms of not attempting as many field goals. But they've been good pretty much everywhere else. Like, having two kick returns for a touchdown is not something that many teams can say. And so I think that overall the unit has done a pretty good job, and it has made a difference in lots of games. And some of the fake punts, like, those are important too. A lot of that.
And block punt.
A lot of block punt. A lot of positive things have come out of special teams that more greatly outweigh what they've done on the field goal kicking side of things. And obviously, that is where they need to improve down the stretch. Figuring that out, we had the Burnett and Schmidt conversation earlier, but that's the biggest hurdle remaining for the special teams unit. All right. Our last question is from at Murray O'Connell. So obviously, we need Notre Dame, Miami, and Texas A&M to win out, but who needs to lose for Notre Dame to have a better shot at the playoffs?
Well, I also think USC doing well will help Notre Dame and the way it's perceived. As far as losing, there's still so many teams in the picture. What you really want is parity. I think if you get to a point where there's four SEC teams, three Big Ten teams, two ACC, one Big 12, then you have a spot for Notre Dame and you have a spot for the Group of Five. I think that is kind of the configuration. If you cheer for games that fit that profile, I think that's the most realistic breakdown of how the teams will go. But again, anytime a team at the top of the conference loses, I do think it would behoove Notre Dame for Miami to get into the ACC championship game rather than being an at-large team. And right now they would be on the outside looking in with that. Virginia and Georgia Tech, I believe, would have the runway to be the top two teams. Virginia's NC State game is weird because it was a non-conference game. They scheduled a extra game because they didn't have a non-conference opponent, so they decided NC State and Virginia play each other, but that wasn't a loss for Virginia in the conference standings. So those are the teams on a trajectory. So you don't want to leave Miami out of that conference game, title game.
Yeah. And Georgia Tech and Virginia don't play each other either. So they both could,
right,
in theory, finish the ACC regular season undefeated.
And they don't have a lot of tough games, especially Virginia.
And so I think you want to root for those teams to lose, or at least one of them, to make sure that Miami gets in that conference championship game and then likely would win that. I have some of the other teams that you like, the one loss Big 12 teams, one loss in conference, Cincinnati, Houston, Texas Tech. Like, I think it would be beneficial if BYU is just the clear best team in the Big 12 for Notre Dame. Anyone who's not Indiana and Ohio State in the Big 10, in my opinion, like Oregon, Illinois, Michigan, those teams could lose. And that would be beneficial for Notre Dame. And
USC beating Oregon would be huge.
Right. Some of the SEC teams, Georgia, Ole Miss, Missouri, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt. I mean, A&M can take care of LSU and Texas and help out with Missouri in terms of potentially removing them from the playoff conversation. LSU and Texas seem a little bit like long shots right now, but they could get back in that mix with what they have left on their schedule. So those are just some teams. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could lose that would benefit Notre Dame, and then a lot that can still happen here. With so many games left on the slate, but Notre Dame is in a decent spot if it can win out, but it would certainly be helpful if USC continues to win, Miami continues to win, and Texas A&M continues to win. All right, that is it for this week's episode of the Third and Gold Podcast. You can find us over on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcast homes. Search for Notre Dame Football with Eric Hansen and Tyler James if you're not already subscribed to us on the proper feeds. We have plenty of written content over at blueandgold.com to enjoy during the off weeks, so stick with Blue and Gold for all your Notre Dame coverage needs.